London Calling. David here. Today's London Walks podcast is another in our Meet Your Guide series. The guide across the table from me this morning is Anna Target. Not to put too fine a point on it, Anna is a dream of a guide. Translated into, say, an Olympic high diving or gymnastics routine, every single judge would be putting up a 10. Anna's that good. She's full of energy. She's incredibly bright. She's got a great voice. She's painstaking. She's organized. She's thorough. She's passionate about her subject. She's got a ton of experience to draw on. She likes people. She reads each group to perfection and tailors the presentation to them. Well, you get the idea. To go back to my sporting metaphors, think back when we were kids and choosing sides for a football game, and always the best players, the gifted ones, got chosen first. Well, if putting together a team of guides was like choosing sides for that football game when you're 9 years old, Anna would be your first choice, and you'd be thrilled to have her on your team. But that's enough fanfare. Let's meet Anna. With me this morning, the platonic ideal of a great guide, the aforementioned Anna Target. So good morning, Anna.
Good morning. How are you, David?
Very well, thank you. And you?
I'm well. Yeah. I'm very, very well. Yeah. Thank you.
Good. Well, Anna, I thought what we'd do this morning is a bit of a mixed bag. I want to find out about you, and then we'll get on to your guiding and the walks you do, and especially the second element of Italy. And can you hear the phone ringing in the background? What you doing? Anyway, tell me the Anna Target story, please, Anna. Where did you grow up? And let's do a quick bio.
Okay. So I was very fortunate to be brought up in the Midlands, Birmingham, and I attended a very good school, a very lucky. Went on to university, had no idea what I wanted to do. And I think this is the reason why I ended up being a guide, because I had no idea, but I was good at languages. So I thought, well, maybe somebody might like me to use my languages, and I'll take American students around France. And it was a disaster, an absolute disaster. And I was absolutely rubbish as a guide. And so I went away and did a few other things. And then once I'd matured a little bit, then I realized that actually I'd quite like to do that job again. So I went to be a tour director, a tour manager, and I started taking people around Europe, first in France. Then I went on to do pretty much most of Western Europe. And finally, I specialized in Italy, which is the reason why I love Italy and the reason why I do some Italian tours.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I've got just already a ton of questions. First of all, can you do a Brum accent if called on to do one?
Absolutely, David. You want me to do a Birmingham accent? I can do a Birmingham accent for you.
And Anna, were you head girl at that school? I can't imagine you not being.
No, in fact, David, I was one of the naughty ones.
Oh, were you? Even better.
I was one of the ones that sat at the back of the class. And, and I don't think I ever did any graffiti on the desks, but I might have.
I bet. Have you confessed to your son that you were one of the naughty ones?
I've told him that there are very different ways of being in school. Uh-huh. And I'm trying to send him down the studious route.
Very good. Very good, Anna. And which university was it you went to then?
I went to Manchester, which was just such a great place.
Uh-huh.
I had a ball, an absolute ball, and didn't take it terribly seriously. I feel sad for students nowadays because, you know, they really, really have to really work hard at university, whereas we just played and came out of it having had 3 or 4 years of great fun. And oh, and what on earth am I going to do now?
And so you were good at languages. So did you, an American would say, did you major in, did you read, a foreign language or two at Manchester? What did you do your
Well,
degree in?
I'm again not knowing what I wanted to do. I did maths and French, which
Maths
is
and
a really
French.
weird combination. But I like to think that maths is the language of science. So actually, they do go very well hand in hand. So I did maths and French, and it was very lucky that I did the French. Because if it had been purely maths, I would never have got through that degree. So it was the French that took me through. And having loved French, came out of university and thought, what shall I do now? I'll go and live in Spain. So I went to live in Spain for a year and taught English once again. I was rubbish, absolutely terrible. But it didn't matter. I had great fun in Spain. And then it was not until later that I finally came to learn Italian. And the reason why I learned Italian was because I started doing these tours of Europe, and all of the drivers were Italian. And they said, "Well, what good is a guide if she can't speak Italian? English, French, and Spanish was not good enough. You had to have Italian as well." So that's where the Italian came in. So yes, I am multilingual now.
And did you start learning French as a schoolgirl then, as a
Yes, I
7-year-old,
did.
something like that?
Yes, I did. And I remember very, very clearly this light bulb moment when I went to France aged 14 and went out. And, you know, me being typical, you know, teenage girl, I could actually communicate with the French boys. And I thought this was amazing. I
All
loved it.
important.
But it was a light bulb moment. I can actually speak French. I can get people to understand me. And that was when I really went for it into, you know, it for languages. And that's where it all started.
I'm bowled over 4 languages. That is so impressive. Are you going to add a fifth one, Anna, just out of curiosity?
Well, you know, I did think about it, and then I started to become a guide. And I think you, if you love languages, you have to really, really love the culture that you are that of the places that you speak the language of. And I just love the whole Mediterranean culture. Nowadays, there are a lot of other cultures that I'd really, really like to, you know, to get in under the skin of, if you see what I mean. But I don't think I'll go as far as learning the language. I've got too much to learn, David. I'm a guide. I need to learn the history of every single place in this country. There's so much to learn.
Do you have different feelings about these 3 languages? I mean, they're similar, aren't they? They're all romance languages, but
Yeah, they are. And the languages themselves, I love. I love each different country for its different aspects. Italy must be the most beautiful country in the world. It is absolutely stunning. It has art, it has food, it has wine, it has beautiful people. The people, you know, aesthetically are absolutely beautiful. But when it comes to personality, you know, I love the Spanish. I just think they're so much fun. They're just great. Whereas the French are a little bit more intellectual, but France, I mean, what a beautiful country as well. I mean, I do think that France really, you know, it really rivals Italy for beauty, definitely.
I've always joked that you have to speak really good French before the French will kind of acknowledge you. But the Italians, if you can say buongiorno, they invite you home to dinner.
Absolutely, absolutely. Let's go for gelato together. Yes.
And the other thought that I always feel slightly sorry for the Italians in the matter of holiday. I mean, when I'm thinking about a holiday, wow, I want to go to Italy. But if you're an Italian, you're already there. How do you improve on that?
Well, they don't. And they don't go anywhere either. They say, "Well, why would I go anywhere
Yeah,
else when I can
exactly.
visit Italy?"
Yeah, exactly.
For them.
Anna, where were you in Spain?
That was a real revelation for me. When I first went to Spain, I got a post teaching in a language school in the north of Spain, in a place called Vitoria. Lovely, lovely place. It's in the Basque country. And of course, my image of Spain up until that time had been the Costas. And, you know, and maybe I'd seen Barcelona and Madrid. And I flew into Bilbao. And it was just like Switzerland. I mean, all these mountains, and the language is different, and the people are different. But I loved it. I loved Spain, and it's such a diverse country. I think a lot of people don't realize how diverse it is. Yeah, it's great. Love it up there.
And I'm fascinated by what you mentioned about taking these American students and it being a bit. Come on, Anna, tell us. I can't imagine you ever being rubbish at anything you would lay a hand to.
Well, you know,
I'm sure you weren't. Go on. No.
They wanted to come to Europe, and the parents all think that they're going to send their child to Europe and they're going to come back with this fantastic education all about Europe. And the kids, many of them really rise to their parents' expectations, but there's always the odd one, isn't there? And so every time we were on the coach, they would have their feet up on the seat. They would ignore everything I said, and they would just keep saying to me, how long is it going to be now, Anna? How long is it going to be now? And I got so fed up of hearing the question that the stock answer was 4 hours. Then they learned not to ask that question anymore.
And, of course, you must have been a near contemporary of theirs. So,
yeah, well, they were all about 15, 16.
Oh, 15, 16, yeah. So they weren't college students. They were younger.
Yeah, they were younger. And I was 21, 22, no, 23 maybe. It was quite a big difference.
Right.
And I used to walk down the corridors of the hotels, which weren't exactly the best hotels. And occasionally you'd find small pockets of 15, 16-year-olds with their cans of a beer. They were not doing what mummy and daddy thought that they were doing.
Yeah, yeah. So now just remind me again. So the sequence was France first, and then Spain, and then Italy. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So what took you to Italy?
Well, if you think about it, the most important cities in Europe to see: Paris, Rome, Venice. Those are the three most important that everybody wants to see. And also, you know, in America, there's a lot of people of Italian descent. So Italy has always been one of the most popular countries for visitors to Europe. So I started off with the French, and you know, I wanted to go to Spain, and I did quite a lot of work in Spain, but eventually the pull of Italy was too great. And even when you're doing European tours, you might be doing, almost always have an Italian city in your European tour. If you went down as far as Venice from Paris on a short tour, or on a slightly longer tour, you would go down as far as Rome. So you actually found yourself in any European tour spending at least a third of your tour in Italy. So they asked me if I would go to Italy because the demand was rising. And so I did, and have never looked back. I just love it, as you know.
You are a very English, consummate Blue Badge guide who is also a consummate continental. Now, it's true, yeah.
I regard myself as being European first.
Yeah.
And British second.
Yeah.
English third. And I don't know whether I suppose even though I come from the Midlands, I feel very much as if London is my home now.
Yeah.
So London. Whereas in Italy, they would do it the opposite way around, you see, because they would say, well, I come from this parish first, then I come from this village, and then I come from this town, and then I come from this region. And then finally they would identify as Italians.
Yeah.
So we do it a little bit. I do it a little bit the other way.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, Anna, you spoke about arriving in Spain and the wallop, the impact of that. What about memories of your first time setting foot in Italy? Where was that? Can you tell me a bit about all of that?
Ah, now that will have been on one of those tours that I did when I was rubbish. Yes. When I first became a tour manager, very, very early on, and we went to Venice. And I remember it very distinctly because it was with an American group, and the teachers were not really very interested in Venice, and they hadn't really waxed lyrical about Venice and what an amazing place it was. There was one teacher who just didn't really like Venice. And so he said, well, we'll go in for the morning, because we were staying outside Venice at the beach. He said, the kids, when we go to the beach, we won't worry too much about Venice. Anyway, that particular morning, it tipped down with rain. Uh-huh. And we were all on this boat arriving at St. Mark's Square in Venice. And there was this curtain, a curtain of rain in front. And you couldn't really see very much. But I thought it was the most beautiful place that I had ever been in my life. It was stunning, stunning. Yeah. And that's where the love affair started. And it still remains very much so.
Yeah, well, I was just thinking as you were saying that, I could hear that note that you just sounded, your passion, your enthusiasm, your love. That's very much there. And it's there in your guiding. I've attended all of your virtual tours in Italy, and I love that. It's just so, it comes across so clearly how you feel about the place. It makes such a difference to us, the listener.
Yeah, well, sometimes people say to me, "And Anna, would you like to guide this area here?" Somebody asked me to do, street art, which is not my thing. And some of the guides do fantastic tours of street art, but it's just not my passion. Mm. So I can't do it. For me, if you're guiding, you want to be explaining to people, you want to be trying to bring things to life for people. And if you don't have a passion for it, it's not going to come to life for them. Mm-hmm. So I feel quite strongly about that, actually.
Yeah. Tough question for you, Anna. I mean, those Italian cities... Is there a Florence, Rome, Venice? Do you have a favorite? You probably don't. It's impossible. Oh, do you? Okay, good.
Yeah, I do. I have, from that moment that I saw Venice for the first time, I have this passionate love affair with Venice. I love Rome. I love Florence. But Venice is special. Venice has a unique history. It is... I just can't describe it. It's fantastic. And I feel very, very much at home there. Maybe I was a Venetian in a past life. Mm. I don't know. But it's so special. It's so unique. And it has always welcomed visitors and then said, thank you for coming. Goodbye. And so you can never really, really get under the skin of Venice. You'll always be an outsider. But the beauty is such that, and the uniqueness is such that I have to keep going back. In fact, when the pandemic started, I was actually at a ball in Venice. Uh-huh. The day that the pandemic in Europe, the news broke that it had started to go big in Italy, I was actually in Venice. And my first thought was, oh no. Am I still going to be able to go to the ball? Yeah. We did. Yeah. But it was the last ball that was held in Venice in 2020. Nothing after that. So we're looking forward to 2022. I hope that there will be balls on again.
Exactly. Approximately how many times have you been? And are you still making discoveries as well as you know it?
Oh, yes. Because even though I've been 250 times, maybe.
250 times.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
No, I've counted it up over the years. Oh, that means I'm telling you how old I am. Anyway, I have been a lot, and I've been during the winters as well. And sadly, most of the time I just go for a couple of days. They're really not long visits. And so each time I go for a slightly longer visit, there's always something on my list that I want to go and see. Uh-huh. Something that I haven't seen before, something to do with art, something to do with architecture. And I've still got a long list of places that I want to go and see.
Yeah. You know, Dr. Johnson's great dictum about London, I'm sure that's equally applicable to Venice, isn't it? Yeah. When a man or woman is tired of Venice, they're tired of life.
Exactly. Yes, yeah. I agree.
Yeah. So what about the the blue badge then. When did you do that? How many years ago did you do that?
Well, I kind of just carried on touring around Europe, and then I have a little boy, mm-hmm. my son George, who is now 10, and I realized that I needed to be at home more. How I was going to juggle looking after a child and going out on tour, I realized it was not possible. I did hope that I would still be able to go out on tour, but I decided that I was going to put my energies into my home city. And having now been in London for, 20 odd years, I, very much love London, spend a lot of time here, but also the history here is just amazing. Really, once you get underneath once you start looking at the history of London, you realize that it is the best place in the world to guide. Mm. By far, because our history goes back 2,000 years and literally doesn't stop. And from every single period, we have something amazing, spectacular, and even small little details that seem to have disappeared many, many years ago, you can uncover the most amazing story. So I think I think London is the best place in the world to guide. There's so much here. Mm. And so that's really tickled my intellectual side, and I just keep learning. Yeah, every single day there's something new to learn, and I've really, really enjoyed it. And the pandemic has kind of made me stop and focus more on London and not go to Italy, which has been really good. It's been great for my relationship with my son, but it's also been, it's been fantastic to be able to go even further in depth and also go to learn more about areas around London that I didn't have time for uh-huh. before. So I've started doing a lot more about the outskirts of London.
Yeah.
So the area that I live in, Richmond and Wimbledon and places like that, which are amazing. Yeah. But then it's outside the centre, so people don't know about it.
Another mark of a great guide, a consummate professional, is this whole business of the eagerness to learn more and going on learning more and delving ever deeper into the patch, cultivating it, really curating it. Yeah.
Yes. And what you find, the more you go deeper or wider, I don't know whether I go deeper. I think I just go wider. The more you go wider, the more you see the links with all the other bits and pieces that you already know. Mm. So, I found that my interests have started to evolve. And yes, I'm still loving all of those wonderful sites in central London and all those really important areas like, Kensington, Soho, the City of London, St. James's. But now I'm interested in the people that used to live there, but then they would come out to the edge of London and they would have homes on the edge of London. Mm. And I found out so much more about them. Mm-hmm. Brilliant.
I have a theory here, Anna. I mean, you have just wonderful taste. You like beautiful things. You like parks. I mean, I love all the stuff that you love. And I'm just, my theory is that maybe Italy and your feelings for beauty, beautiful places, beautiful things there, that has sort of impacted a little bit what you've explored here and got interested in here. Is that right? Would you say that? Because you really do have good taste. You take us to nice places, really wonderful places.
Yeah, and I really do. I'm all about the visual, and I'm all about things that have an impact and a wow. And when we started doing the virtual tours, I suddenly realized that actually we have an opportunity here to really show the beauty of places without, without having to travel, because of course we couldn't travel. So I was able to put in all these beautiful places and link them from one side of London to the other. And for me, it's all about what's stunning, what's, a visual impact. Mm-hmm. And I've always been the same, to be honest. And I love my art. It's all about beauty for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Whether it's man-made beauty, as in some of these great, beautiful houses. Well, I guess the gardens you go to, they're, in a sense, man-made with a lot of help from nature. as well, but
yes, I've really developed an interest in gardens, gardening. No, not gardening. I do gardening, but I don't talk very much about gardening. But the actual gardens, the people behind them, the historical characters. I went to a very nice park the other day, Paynes Hill Park, and it's down on the M25 at Cobham. And the man who created it, Richard Hamilton, he was very interested in art as well. And he wanted to design his gardens so that at certain places, he reveals the most amazing views. And he does it brilliantly. So you see almost like a picture. It's almost like straight out of a work of art. Mm-hmm. And that was a real wow for me. And so, yeah, each different garden has its own thing. And I've really enjoyed discovering that. I mean, we've got our gardens up in town, and I live very close to Kew, so I'm very lucky. Oh, yeah. I can go to beautiful places all the time.
Yeah.
In fact, I am very lucky because, you know, I live in an area of London which just has one beautiful work of art or garden or stately home or country house after the other. And everywhere I go, there's history around me.
Uh-huh.
But we're living it today.
Yeah.
No, it's just fantastic that people are living in these historic buildings, and they've stood the test of time. It's fantastic. I love it.
Now you spoke about kind of pushing the boundaries out in the London area, finding more and more about further out London, and of course your badge will qualify you for Stonehenge and Oxford and places like that, Windsor. Do you do guiding in those places as well?
Yes, I do. Not as much as I'd like to, because I have a small boy, which means that my days are limited. And if I guide to Stonehenge, I always think Stonehenge, it's lovely to tie it in with something else, because, you know, it is a small site. And so if you can tie it in with Salisbury or something else, then, you know, that really makes a day of it. But it does make a look for a long day. I love going to Stonehenge. You know, some people would say it's just a bunch of rocks. But actually, if you know your Stonehenge, you can really bring that once again to life. And you can go back, you know, 2,500 years, 3,500. We're talking 3,000 BC. Mm. This is 5,000 years ago. Mm. And you can really bring to life what life used to be like in those days.
Sure.
Yeah, I do. I do Stonehenge. I do Stonehenge, Salisbury, Oxford, I know very well because I'm from the Midlands. Stratford, I know very well from the Midlands. I love to go to Bath. Oh, Regency Bath.
Yeah.
Fantastic. I like to guide outside town. I wish that I could guide in even more places. I have this checklist of places that I have to go and visit. So this year I'm going up to Northumberland because I have to go to Holy Island and to Lindisfarne. I just have to. I don't think you can be a guide without having been there. It's just so fundamental as part of our history. The list goes on and on and on.
Yeah. So how many VTs, how many virtual tours have you created? Can you give us a bucket list of them?
It started off with the area that I'm in, which is the Thames, on the Thames, around Richmond. And then I started producing these wonderful virtual tours. I think I have now 5 Italian tours, or is it 6 Italian tours? But I also have a whole series of tours on gardens, on stately homes. I've also done museums. And when I do museums, I like to link museums and to be able to look at museums slightly differently. Because normally you say, oh, let's go to the British Museum and see what's inside there. Well, I've done that slightly differently. And I've said, oh, I love the medieval world. Isn't it fantastic?
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at the medieval world via various museums. So I went to the V&A and the British Museum and the British Library and linked them across. And that's what virtual tours enable us to do, is they enable us to jump from one place to the next next. So I think I probably created about 18 virtual tours now.
Fantastic.
They take a long time.
Yeah.
They take a long time. Yeah. And visually, they have to have impact.
Mm-hmm.
And So this goes back to your question of the visual, and I believe very strongly that we are not delivering lectures. Lectures are for the people who are really interested in one particular subject and go seriously in depth. That's brilliant. But we are guides, and what we need to do is we need to bring things to life for people. So it's not delivering a lecture. It is making you see things. And so it's very, very different to delivering a lecture.
Yeah, there's a more of an element of being an entertainer and a performer as well as an informer, I think. Yeah.
It's also it's being a guide is a mixture of so many things. It's being a mother hen and looking after people. It's being a teacher. It's being an entertainer, an actor, and it's also a psychologist in a way, because you can see people looking at things and flagging sometimes, and you realize, oh, I haven't explained that right. Let me bring it more to life. And every person will see things slightly differently, and they will love things in different ways. And so you have to be able to work out what is it that's going to stimulate this particular person about sight. So you could be looking at, for example, the Houses of Parliament,